This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. What brightens up those bleak days on the shores of the Great Lakes? To paraphrase the great Irish punk Shane McGowan, it's rum, oddities, and the lash. Between our own vibrant traditional folk scene here in the state and our maritime history, Michigan has quite a few shanties of its own to sing. We've been especially interested in the emerging information about sea shanties that were sung by Black sailors on the lakes. With us today from the Michigan History Center is curator of exhibits Jillian Reese, who's been looking into this for us. Hi, Jillian.
Hello. How are you, April?
Pretty good. When did Black sailors first begin working on the Great Lakes?
So Black sailors have been working on the Great Lakes as long as European sailors have. The first ships coming in from France and Britain, long before America was founded, working the fur trade on the Great Lakes, both free and enslaved people working on the ships.
Well, in some places, maritime jobs can be a seasonal line of work. Would that have been true for sailors on the lakes? Would they have had other jobs and other lives?
Yes, definitely. You know, the first fur traders working on the Great Lakes would have come here during the thaw, during the spring and summer. But some folks did stay in Michigan. So actually Michigan's first Black resident was born in Mackinac Island to two enslaved people who were there on a French merchant ship over the winter time and was then baptized at St. Anne's on Mackinac Island.
Wow. Well, what kind of ships would these sailors have been working on? What was driving the industry at that point?
At first, like I said, it would have been the fur trade. As the fur trade waned in the early 1800s, the rise of fishing, and then eventually the big boom of iron ore and copper ore mining in the UP would have brought a lot more activity to the Great Lakes with shipping goods between places like Milwaukee, Sault Ste. Marie, and Detroit.
Were Black sailors paid on par with their colleagues?
No, they weren't, actually. They were probably paid about half of what white sailors would have been paid, although they did agitate for higher wages and often got them because, you know, it's a solitary life on a ship, and a ship is only as happy as the morale of their crew. So oftentimes we hear oral history stories of Black sailors asking for more and getting it. And they also did different work than white sailors. And you see that in the sea shanties.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. But before we do, the description of the pay rate and the kind of jobs, I guess that kind of tells us a bit about how the captains of these commercial vessels thought about their Black sailors. Do you have any other information to fill in about that?
Yeah. So, you know, when we think about stereotypes that are rooted in racism, particularly people of African descent, a lot of the stereotypes around their labor are revolving around sort of this idea that they have unending strength and constitution and stamina, that they can, you know, do the hardest jobs. And that's one of the things that drove slavery to begin with. When Europeans started settling North America and the Caribbean and South America, they brought people of African descent over because they thought that they were more suited for the back-breaking work that was required to clear forests and jungles. And so, you know, there are still, you know, hints of that today. And, you know, unfortunately, that was something that typecasted a lot of Black sailors when they were working on the ships.
Do we know, for that matter, how the sailors viewed their work? Was this the kind of thing that people did for many years, or maybe just for a while before finding other jobs?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, obviously there were probably lots of sailors that loved it and worked on ships their whole lives. But, you know, even for white sailors, usually working on a ship was a means to an end. you know, you would work on the ship. Usually when you were younger, it was a good way to see the world and to move around. Particularly in the United States and the upper Midwest, you could go from, you know, New York to Montreal to Detroit to Milwaukee, and you could find communities and areas that you might want to settle in eventually. And so a lot of the first Black Michiganders actually came to settle in Michigan after working on these ships, whether it was the fur trade or fishing or hauling natural resources that fueled the Industrial Revolution. They would then, you know, retire after making their money on the ship and settle in some of these larger cities that dotted the St. Lawrence waterway.
That's really interesting. You know, we've all heard so many stories of the Great Migration. I hadn't even thought about that kind of migration over the waterways into Michigan.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, when we think about the opening of the Erie Canal, what I think a lot of people, popular imagination, is thinking about, you know, the Yankees from upstate New York moving to Michigan and coming on ships through the Erie Canal. But actually, the first great migration of African people of African descent coming to Michigan was also through the Erie Canal, and they would have been coming along with the Yankees. Some of the first prominent Black Detroiters, for example, came either as passengers, but oftentimes working on these ships, and then, you know, leaving their job and settling in Detroit.
So there was this degree of heightened mobility that working on ships provided to Black sailors. But is there evidence that the shipping industry provided a way to long-term economic improvement in people's lives?
Definitely. You know, a lot of the sailors, when they would retire or maybe leave the industry, would have been able to set up their own businesses. So, for example, one of Michigan's first prominent Black families, the Bongas, settled in Mackinac Island after manumission from being enslaved on a fur trading ship. And they set up a tavern in Mackinac Island. They actually built Mackinac Island's first hotel, so starting the what we know now as the tourist industry in Mackinac Island. And they became so wealthy that they ended up moving down to Detroit and were very prominent in the African-American community there. And they actually, you know, were able to marry into prominent Odawa families and became much more embedded in Michigan's fur trade that way. And there are lots of stories like this where folks were able to work on the ships and then build their own businesses afterwards. I think, though, we shouldn't overstate that, of course. You know, we Black sailors made about 10% of the crews on Great Lakes ships, and they are very underrepresented in the scholarship. Some books about the fishing industry and the merchant industry on the Great Lakes don't even talk about the experiences of these Black sailors. So we know about the more prominent names and the folks who became successful after leaving the shipping industry and leaving their life as sailors. But we really don't know a lot about the everyday people who worked on these ships.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Michigan History Center's Jillian Reese about the less-known history of Black sailors on the Great Lakes. What was the relationship between Great Lakes shipping and the Underground Railroad? I hear what you're saying, that Black sailors were only this smallish percentage of sailors on the ship, maybe 10%. But did this represent an avenue to freedom if there was a willing ship's captain and folks on board who were willing to help?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to think about that 10%, though, in proportion to the number of Black people living in Michigan. I mean, it was in the 1800s, they made up a very small proportion of the overall population. You know, some estimates in the middle of of the 1800s say that there were only a couple thousand Black folks living in Detroit, a city that we think about as, you know, this central place for Michigan's Black community. And so you have to think about these ships, you know, coming into harbor, and, you know, one out of every 10 people on the ship is Black. So I think that is definitely, you know, we hear 10% and that might sound like a small number, but it was overrepresented when you think about the overall population of Black Michiganders. But to your question about the Underground Railroad, you know, many ship captains who were white would have, you know, had these racist stereotypes that pigeonholed the type of labor that Black sailors could do on their ships and limited the amount of money they were willing to pay for them. But at the same time, many of these ship captains were Quakers, and Quakers were very involved in the abolitionist movement in Michigan. And so you had, you know, ships that had Black sailors present, and you had ship captains who were sympathetic to abolition, that part of their work was moving between the fluid border between Michigan and Upper Canada. And Upper Canada, of course, was the place where many freedom seekers were trying to go because they were out of reach of slave catchers. So many of these ship captains would bring on freedom seekers onto their ships and disguise them as Black sailors. And we have traditions of folks that gained freedom, but they also gained new life skills. Many of them would actually be working on the ships, making money while they were waiting for their passage. So it provided an opportunity. And, you know, I think we don't know a lot about this experience. We know that there were abolitionists who ran ships and owned ships. But we do know that many folks went across the Great Lakes to Canada to eventual freedom.
Well, we know that sailors certainly find a way to pass the day, and Black sailors at the height of Great Lakes shipping were no different. Will you tell us a little bit more about the sea shanties that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, so in the 1930s and 1960s, some historians started collecting the oral traditions of Great Lakes sailors. And there is a great repository of this folk history at the University of Michigan. And one of the things that they collected were these folk songs, these sea shanties. And like you said, this was a way to pass time. You know, you don't have to be a great singer to sing a sea shanty, but it was also a labor song. It was something that was meant to keep time when you were working on a ship. And so different activities would have different sea shanties. So there would be sea shanties when you're working on deck. There would be sea shanties for cleaning. There would just, you know, be different ones. And so these historians started recording them. Some of the sea shanties that they recorded were specific to the labor that Black sailors did on the ships. You know, I talked about how there is very little in the sort of traditional scholarship about sailors' lives on the Great Lakes, about Black sailors. But these sea shanties, because they're so rooted in the day-to-day operations of the ships, actually give us a great view into what their experiences were.
So how were these songs preserved? What did researchers in the 30s and the 60s have to go on?
Historians would go out and talk to these sailors, and they would either get recordings of the sea shanties or they would just write down the lyrics. Many sea shanties kind of follow the same tempo and beat. That's basically, you know, how we know about these songs, is that they were passed down through generations of sailors.
I know you're not a musicologist, Jillian, but could you give us an example of the kind of variation in lyrics that you find in the shanties that were sung by Black sailors?
Yeah, one of the more prominent, or I should say well-known, shanties that were sung by Black sailors was one called The Ward Lined. And it was a shanty that was sung by sailors working on ships owned by Eber Ward, who was a owner of merchant ships, and he himself was involved in the Underground Railroad and in abolition. So we know that his ships were part of this, and Eber actually, a bounty was put on his head because he was so involved in moving freedom seekers from the United States to Canada. So this song is about the hauling that Black sailors would do. And so I said before that Black sailors and white sailors would have different jobs on ships. And so white sailors were usually involved in the actual ship sailing, and Black sailors were the folks who were hauling the cargo on and off the ship when they got to port. So the sea shanty, which is quite long, it's a number of lines, actually goes through that whole process. One of the first lines in the song is, "Oh, the mate, he says no work on the ship, just lay around and enjoy the trip." And that was the time that they would be sailing, since Black sailors weren't involved a lot of time in the actual sailing of the ship. They would be able to rest during that time.
"Oh, the mate, he says no work on the ship, but tell me
who's on the way, boys, who's on the way?
Just lay around and enjoy the trip, but tell me
where you go.
Oh, the mate, he says one trip up the lake, but tell me
who's on the way, boys, who's
Jillian,
on the way?
If someone's ears are perking up right now, where can we learn more about the Great Lakes Black Sailors and their sea shanties?
So we are doing research on it right now at the Michigan History Center, but you can also find songs like The Ward Line on YouTube. Folks have recorded them, and they are available there.
Jillian Reese is curator of exhibits at the Michigan History Center. Jillian, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
"What she'll do, tell me where you go. Lake Superior is colder than ice, so tell me
who's on the way, boys, who's on the way?
Fall in just once and freeze all your life, so tell me
where you go.
Lake Superior is big and rough, so tell me
who's on the way, boys, who's on the way?
And for this holler, one trip's enough, so tell me
where you go."
Next up, health officials in two of Michigan's COVID hotspots tell us what's going on in their communities.
"Unfortunately, I hate to say we need people to be concerned, but we need people to be concerned.
We believe that we can achieve herd immunity through the pace that we're on. We want to see more, of course.
The question is whether that will be fast enough to outpace the new outbreaks. Stay with us.
William H. Stevenson is a lying round the bend, to tell me
who's on the way, boys, who's on the way?
And all she's doing is a killing good men, to tell me
where you go.
Now I'm a going back to Detroit, to tell me
who's on the way, boys, who's on the way?
And no more working both day and night."